I'm Paul Lancour with PodTech.net. With me on the line today, Karim Zerhouni. He's a senior manager at Bearing Point in the financial services practice, and he focuses on financial information security. Karim, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks to you, Paul.
And the topic that we're discussing today, implementing financial crime and compliance solutions. And the first thing I would ask you, Karim, is who are these financial criminals?
Well, that's a great question. Financial criminals are obviously, like it says, people who try to gain a monetary advantage using shady sources or means, or simply criminal means. But we're really talking about the big game here. We're talking about people who can online access to thousands of accounts, harvest them, and then sell them to third parties, gaining a specific advantage by doing so. We're talking about people who can the same thing, get advantage people who are not aware of phishing and phishing techniques on the net, and get information about clients' accounts and the credit cards and secure millions of dollars just by doing so. We're talking also about, obviously, drug lords and all that kind that uses the communication facilities now to promote really money laundering, and they would launder large sums of money, as everybody knows, and this is across multiple countries. So we're talking about international fraud here.
And we're talking about it on a fairly large scale. We're talking about organized crime, and you touched on this a little bit in terms of phishing. I wonder, what kind of tools do these criminals use in order to achieve their goals?
Well, this is actually an excellent question, and it's much broader than what most of the people think. Here is why. 10 years ago, if we read in a newspaper or heard on TV that someone, a student, got access to a specific website, I mean, to a regulated website, the FBI or something like this, and got access to there and pulled some pranks, people would even smile to that and think that, well, that's something great. Well, actually, not great at all. It was not at that time, but it's even worse now, simply because criminals now and online criminals are not students. They are actually PhDs, they are experts in computer science, and they simply work for organized crime groups. It's as funny as it seems, it's to them, it's exactly like another job. Like you and I would wake up in the morning and go to our enterprise, they would do the same, but they would do the same all the time online. They have incredibly sophisticated tools. I can give you an example. There is a Trojan that is called the Limbo Trojan. You can buy actually this Limbo Trojan on the net in specialized news groups for $600. You get even 1 year of technical support on it, and you can get even customization of that particular Limbo Trojan to target specific segment. So if you want to target a Visa corporation or a specific bank or another payment card industry corporation, they can actually modify the code and the feel of the application in order to fit to what you want. So we're really talking about very sophisticated groups. It's not anymore any students, and they are capable of getting large sums of money. Can give you I think this is an example that I give to people who think that because they are at home and they have a secure connection, everything is okay, and they can do whatever they want because they think that they are secured and encrypted. Actually, there is something that most people do not understand. Encryption protects the integrity of data. It doesn't prove the authenticity of any transaction, or it cannot prevent the man-in-the-middle attack, something that comes in between. And here is an example. Not long time ago, there were a certain number, actually a lot, I think around 1,000 wireless routers that were on sale on eBay, sold by a corporation that was headquartered in one of the Eastern European countries. And the interesting thing about these, that they were half 50% off of the market price, and they were absolutely great routers. They are simply Linksys routers, and they were perfect, brand new. So, of course, everybody went there and bought them. It's half the price. The thing is, they didn't know is that actually an organized criminal group modified the iOS, the operating system, the internet operating system, on that particular, on these machines, using something called the open remote terminal, which is a terminal that functions exactly like the original operating system. However, it gives total access and information to hackers and other fraudsters that are on the net. So basically, if someone uses that, buys the thing on eBay, put it at home and uses it, even if his connection is encrypted, simply what happens is that everything that he types is logged and transferred to a hacker somewhere on the net. And if I'm not mistaken, the first day after launching that, this organized crime group leveraged more than $4 million worth of fraud. And this was just on the first day. And people are not prepared now to face this type of challenges, this type of threats. So these are two examples, Paul.
Well, that leads us to the next part of our discussion here. As you've outlined, these groups are well-financed, well-organized, more sophisticated than probably most people would take into consideration. And that presents great problems for criminal justice organizations all over the world. But we're going to focus in on what the organization can do and tie it in with compliance solutions. So my question for you, Kareem, is compliance with what? With international laws, with local laws? I'm sure there's a wide range of things. And then what kind of solutions are we talking about to bring the organization into compliance that would help prevent some of these attacks?
Right. So exactly, Paul. So yes, compliance is a process. It's not a specific tool. It's basically, there is no substitute for hands-on experience. There is no substitute for professional services and practical experience within this particular realm. I'm talking about anti-fraud. I'm talking about information security, and I'm talking about anti-money laundering. If within the enterprise there is not even a function that watches these things, that have a watch list of all the, for example, the if we're talking about an enterprise dealing with other banks and we're focusing on anti-money laundering, so we must have, this enterprise have to a watch list of, I would say, shady organizations that have been flagged that way by the industry and or by the various regulators. So someone, a group in this particular enterprise has to watch for these things. So this is on one side. On the other side, when we're talking about federal laws and we're talking about the SEC, again, we need someone in every enterprise that deals with money to watch on what are the new regulations, are we compliant, and do a regular check on the multiple milestones that have to be completed in order to ensure 100% compliance. Because if 100% compliance is not attained, there will be a loophole, and this loophole might be exploited by some fraudsters. So the technology is a tool only. Again, it's a tool. The final arbitrator must be the team of experts that know everything about these things and have international experience in terms of implementing solutions that would prevent this. And let me say it again, Paul. There is no one solution, no one technological solution that would fix the problem. Otherwise, it would be very easy. It's not this. It's a process. There are multiple points in it. Verifying first, getting that watch list, verifying that currently we are doing the best to match the compliance that is required from us, and make sure that we apply every new compliance rule, that either a federal one or international one, to make sure that we will not provide a loophole to these organizations.
And as is suggested by all of that, that not only is this a process, but it's an ongoing process to ensure that 100% compliance. This has to be revisited over and over again, I would imagine.
That's exactly what I meant, Paul. Thank you for reminding me to tell you that it's actually something that looks like a bar. See, when you have to jump over a bar it's not the long jump, but it's really the jump over the bar. So today the bar is at a certain level, and everybody has to comply, and everybody has to do that now, because otherwise, it's simple, it's prison. However, a good way to address the future is to prepare ourselves to reach the next level, because the next level is going to come. As I said 10 years ago, they were just students trying to pull pranks. Now we're talking about organized crime that can leverage loopholes and get a significant monetary advantages and be able to leverage hundreds of millions of dollars. I'm not exaggerating. There are examples where you have fraudsters that actually submit botnets, means the robot networks, which are internal, so they compromise the internal network of a large organization, and they control at one particular point through the distribution of a specific worm. That worm is going to work as a client server software. So the worm is going to be distributed silently across all the machines that are connected to the internal network, and then they're going to report back to a server. Of course, the server is going to be controlled by a fraudster somewhere on the net, and then that fraudster will have at his disposal 1,000 machines that will work for him as robots. This is called a botnet. When you use a botnet, it doesn't matter if you have a strong encryption or if you have it matters if you have specific encryption schemes, but for most encryption schemes it doesn't matter, because they're capable of getting 10,000 machines in one night and keeping this for a month, because you won't know that your machine is compromised. We're not talking about the people who come there and take files out of it. Yeah, this exists as well. People hackers who go on the net trying to get access to a company and get access to a server and get information there or deface a website. No, we're talking about people who know exactly what they want. They're not going to do anything fancy on your machine. You're going to think that your machine is perfectly safe, but actually there is a rootkit on it. And when you go out and you leave your office because it's night, they start their work. So they get 1,000 here, 1,000 machine here, 1,000 machine there, etc. It ends up there are some botnets that are as large as 10,000 machines. And with that, they divide any scope of encryption by 10,000. It's going to, at one point, the encryption scheme is going to break. And I'm not talking about specific encryption such as elliptic curve cryptography with the large keys that would allow, really, a very strong encryption. This is, by the way, this is why the NIST and the government is now recommending solutions that use very strong encryption based out of elliptic curve cryptography, because this is very difficult to penetrate, even by using brute force attacks such as the one I'm describing.
Well, Karim, you certainly helped raise awareness, if not outright fear, about some of these topics, and certainly it's an area that needs a lot of scrutiny. So I appreciate you taking the time out today and speaking with us about this.
You're welcome.
Karim Zerhouni is a senior manager at Bearing Point.